Train Podcast Series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my big homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Hey, and it was Pat's birthday the other day, so y'all make sure y'all tell Pat happy birthday one time, Pat, happy birthday. Hey, remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PACS, Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PACS, Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org to visit the website, to go through and see everything that they have for you, the codes of conduct, learn more about the organization, how you can become a member and a donor, get involved, and also check out that learning center. So once again, that's PACTSINC.org. While you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com to learn more about myself, Patrick, the host of the Enigma Sep Hour, Enigma September, as well as, meet everybody. Meet everybody. So remember, we got our shows every Monday. You get the Fix Sports Podcast. You get the Freedom Train Network, the Freedom Train Podcast Series, every Wednesday. You get Lessons from the Screen every Thursday, and you get a live showing of the Enigma Sep Hour every Friday at 10:30 p.m., either here on freedomtrainradio.com or the Enigma September YouTube channel. So make sure you check us out, because we active. Remember, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Radio Republic. Radio Republic?
Radio Public.
Radio Public. Yeah, radio is in the public. So just remember it like that, because y'all keep forgetting. That's how I keep remembering y'all. So Radio Public. So this is how we do it. We out here. Pat.
What up?
Happy birthday, dog. It's my dog birthday.
I'm not what you really, because I'm on my 2 Chainz,
Okay. All you want for your birthday is a big booty.
Yeah. I don't really get to enjoy my birthday though, because my son's birthday is 2 days after mine. So my birthday is kind of like a placeholder for his. It's kind of like, oh, Dad, it's your birthday today? That's right. Your son's birthday in 2 days, ain't it?
Well, start letting them know if you want a birthday, you better celebrate mine.
Cool. I ain't really big on birthdays anyway. As long as I get my 2 Chainz, I'm good.
It is, man. Oh, I ain't mad at you. That's what's up, man. So a lot has happened since we last had a social discussion though, man. Like your boy Jesse Smollett, all the information came out by him. You had the R. Kelly thing, then you had the Michael Jackson thing.
Then the little Bow Wow thing.
Yeah, little Bow Wow. Hey, man, that was crazy, the thing with Bow Wow. Like, he got, he got beat up by the chick, or he didn't fight back, and everybody was laughing at him. And I just thought that the hypocrisy in people, man. Y'all, on one end, y'all mad at all these other cats for domestic violence and sexual assault, but then the other end, when the dude get assaulted, it's funny. Like, make y'all minds up.
A lot of people on a lot of fuck shit, so
I mean, that's why we do what we do, so we can call out fuck shit.
Already.
Hey, did you catch any of that stuff that was going on with the Michael Jackson series or whatever? I didn't.
No, I didn't. But I ain't really watched the R. Kelly stuff either, so I've been so disconnected with all of that. Well, R. Kelly and Michael Jackson are different. I don't mean to group them together. But just to say, I've just kind of been the whole mini-series, docu-series, exposés, and all that other stuff. I haven't been paying attention to that stuff.
Yeah. I ain't gonna lie. I watched the R. Kelly series. I don't know if I saw. I might have saw. It was one of them days where I was just wasn't doing that, and I watched it. And then it was kind of, it was crazy. It was crazy, and all everything in the aftermath that fell from that. So, Yeah, we as a community, we had 20 years to do what we need to do with R. Kelly, and we chose not to. So it is.
Yeah, so I guess they trying to, I guess, you know, the weirdest thing I heard about Michael Jackson, I don't know if they, if it was kind of the bulk of the docuseries or whatever, is they said he had a bunch of pictures on one of his computers of grown women bodies with little kids' heads photoshopped onto them or something or another. I don't know.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
Really weird. Yeah, that's out there. That's out there. But you know what? We found out that your boy Jesse, well, not your boy, like not your homeboy, but found out Jesse, whatever his name is, found out he was lying. Like, come on, man, you had us ready to defend you, cuz you out here lying, man, with that bullshit, man. Trying to be more famous with that bullshit, man.
Yeah, it's kind of messed up. I think it exposes a couple of different things, even in it being messed up. But at the end of the day, it's kind of hard to have those discussions on a situation that's messed up. So, you know, we can talk about the fact that he was never really believed from the jump.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't believe him. I know my thing was, for right now, we're going to believe you until more evidence come out. But if we find out you're lying, we're going to get your ass.
Yeah, and I think that has to be, like, okay, you don't want to condemn nobody before evidence is presented. And that goes both ways. You don't want to condemn him as a liar, and you don't want to condemn nobody else as guilty before the evidence is presented. But it really seemed like from Jump Street, and I know a lot of people are talking about his story was just too wild. That's hindsight, you know, now that you know what
happened. Yeah, now that you got all the evidence.
Right. But, you know, you think about, there's an interesting dynamic there in terms of people who are believed, even with stories that might be a little bit wilder than that, versus people who aren't believed. Period. And it creates an interesting conversation there on who do we find credible when they have these stories.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah, man. I mean, everybody's an investigator these days, because, you know, ever since them damn CSI movies and all that stuff that came, everybody's an expert investigator and can break down evidence and all these things from their couch, because they got their PhDs from their couch, so, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I just thought that whole situation, you know, just it's just crazy. Like think about like the top stories: it's R. Kelly, Michael Jackson, and Jesse Smollett. And it's all crazy stuff. It's all stuff that don't have to happen, but like Jesse, ego. R. Kelly got issues on top of issues. Michael Jackson got issues on top of issues. But it's still, they all stemming back to topics that we would normally talk about, that we normally have been talking about and have been strong advocates for and activists for. And it's just like, I'm not happy that we've been talking about it this long, but I do want to point out to people that we have been ahead of the curve on, like, especially like this R. Kelly stuff and some of these other issues that are in the community here. I'm glad that we've created a platform to where we as men are not afraid to talk about certain topics, even if it does put the spotlight on men. We still talk about it in a fashion that we got to do better and get our stuff together.
Definitely. We most definitely got to do better. And I'm in agreement with you on that sense. You know, I feel proud of the fact that, you know, we've been talking about R. Kelly for, what, 2-3 years before?
Right. I've been listening to him.
And even before we even started the show, we were talking about R. Kelly. So, you know, like both of us, I know me at least, you can go on record to hear me saying we needed to do something about R. Kelly and people like him going back almost 10 years. And I'm sure there's a lot of other people that are going back even further. So,
right.
But in terms of like sexual and domestic violence, domestic abuse, toxic relationships, and all that stuff, You know,
and we've been on
thing
that.
I'm definitely proud of. We've been on that for a minute.
Straight up. And
all of them stories you're talking about, that's not even, you know, because there's a whole other side when you start talking about politics and all that other stuff that's going on right now.
Right. And real quick, though, before we get into topics, that this ADOS, have you been keeping up with what's going on with this ADOS stuff, this African descendants of slaves stuff between, like, some people, the people who created it, and people like Angela Rye and other people saying it's like Russian bots and stuff like that. And Yvette Cornell, part of the group of people who claim to create the ideology or the idea of the movement of, you know, African descendants of slaves doing what they're doing. Like, have you been keeping up with that?
I haven't been keeping up with the if there's some sort of beef between the two groups. No, I haven't been following that.
Okay.
I know I don't like the whole ADOS movement. I think it's a trash movement. I think it's a trash label. I don't agree with it whatsoever.
And why don't you agree with it?
In terms of it as an identifier for a cultural group of people, I don't agree with identifying us as African descendants of slaves. To me, it comes off as divisive at a time when we shouldn't be divisive. And then it comes off, my biggest issue with it is this. How do you know that you're a descendant of a slave, and what happens if you find out you're not? Are you kicked out of the group? Are you, you know, are you not allowed to be in the group anymore, even if you were an active participant? What about, like, it? In my opinion, the issues that black people have in America, yes, they kind of start with slavery, but they expand far and beyond past slavery. There were a lot of black folks in America right now that don't have slaves as a part of their ancestry, but that doesn't mean that they still don't face white supremacy the same way the rest of us do. That doesn't mean that they still haven't faced the Jim Crow laws, the black codes. That doesn't mean they still haven't faced redlining and all of the other racist practices of America just because their ancestors weren't necessarily slaves. So I think, you know, you run into a fine line with that as a label. My other beef with it is that it largely seems to be a movement depending on white people recognizing that they've done something wrong and fixing it for us instead of us taking the power to fix it for ourselves. And I'm always going to disagree with a movement that's more focused on other people than my people.
So, in your opinion, as far as ideology, because like we've talked before, Dr. Claude Anderson been talking about specific things for descendants of slaves for a while. So the ideology behind the ADOS thing is not new. It's not something that these people created. They might have created this movement, this new thing, but the ideologies and things is not new. And Dr. Anderson is on record for the last 40 years talking about this stuff. He put it in his book, Black Labor, White Wealth, but in his book, Powernomics. So, you know, it's not new things, but what do you think are some of the fundamental differences between what he was talking about and what they talked about?
Well, I think that's another beef I have with it is the fact that they're claiming credit for something that's a lot older than them. And as you said on several occasions, they know that if they bothered to research.
Right.
But here's the thing. Dr. Claude Anderson talks about reparations and things of that nature as a part of a systemic fix for the black community, as part of a cultural change in the black community that ultimately empowers black people to do better. He also presents ideas that would empower us as a community, whether or not we get reparations. Like, so his entire model isn't based on reparations. His model is based on black people understanding their wealth, their value, and their ability to make things happen and utilizing it to benefit their people. And if you can get reparations out of that, get reparations because you're old. Their model seems to be, we can't do anything unless white people help us, so we need white people to help us. And I think for me, that's the biggest fundamental difference is the need for outside groups to help us.
Right.
And I
right.
can't, and I just can't support any movement that's telling me that I need somebody else, another group of people, a group of people that have historically not done very much to help me. I need them to be on my side in order to progress. I call your movement bullshit.
Yeah. And one reason why I'm asking is I've glanced over some of the stuff, but I haven't looked directly into the ADOS stuff. But from what you've looked at there, the whole thing is based off of strictly getting reparations.
Yeah, I've read their website. It's not a whole lot of reading, so there might, I'm sure they might listen to this and they might be like, well, that's not all we meant. But from reading their websites and from listening to Yvette Carnell, however you say her name, that's the model. We need reparations. We can't fix things ourselves. They're too bad. We need white supporters. We need white people to help us. And that's, like I said, I just can't get down with that viewpoint. I'm not saying it's right, not saying it's wrong. Just saying I don't think that that's a beneficial viewpoint for black people to have.
Right, right. No, I got you. And that's something we'll go more into in future shows. It was on my mind real quick. So, you know, kind of give it a little tease, a little warm up before we get to these topics. So we got four topics that we're going to jump into for y'all. So the first one is, you know, a couple of shows ago, well, shit, over a month or so ago, we did Who is Kamala Harris? So today we're asking the question, and we're going to learn more about Cory Booker. So who is Cory Booker? Right. Then we want to talk about Ethiopia taking back their land from investors who promised jobs and failed on their promise. Also going to talk about 21 men who are arrested in Atlanta in a football-themed child sex sting. Then our last topic is we're going to discuss the ongoings between Amanda Seals, the actress and comedian and whatever else she is, Amanda Seals and ex-football player, current neurosurgeon Myron Roll, and Amanda Seals saying that Myron Roll sexually harassed her. And she's saying eight other women came forward and said he sexually harassed them. So we're going to kind of talk about that. And for me, I want to kind of talk about that and within the context of everything else that's going on in America right now, as far as the Me Too movement and black men being put on the forefront and being tried and executed for sexual assault. But, Pat.
What up?
Who the hell is Cory Booker, man?
You want the ratchet answer or the political answer?
Yeah, man. Bro, where you at? Give me the ratchet answer. All
right, well, the ratchet answer is that Cory Booker is a fuck nigga.
All right, now break that down.
Nah, all jokes aside, Cory Booker is a former, he's a former mayor of Newark in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a former city council member, so he's very much come up through the local circuits. This is, I believe, his first term as a senator. You know, senators are elected
yeah.
for 6-year stints, and I believe he was elected around about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So he's 49 years old. He's from Washington, D.C. He is a former Rhodes Scholar.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Stanford University. So there's that. He doesn't have the illustrious HBCU network behind him, but he does have the illustrious PWI Stanford University behind him. So there's
right.
that.
But you know what, though? The one of the things that they say kind of stamped him as the community man is staying in the residence that wasn't up the code to try to force some change and things and doing like little things like that to kind of get his hood credit, I guess, living where he's living.
Yeah, when he was mayor and as a senator, he did, see, here's the deal with Cory Booker. you don't know what's real and what's not. Because he's a huge self-promoter. Like, he's real big in understanding the optics of a potential situation and understanding how to utilize the situation. That's like during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, where he released what was supposed to be confidential information to the public. And as he was releasing it, he was like, "Now, I don't care if I get kicked out of Congress or whatever. I'm going to release this because the American people need to see it." And now, we all knew this is a political stunt. We know that your ass ain't finna get kicked out of Congress. But you'll do that type of stuff because you know it scores you political points. So he's very much a grandstander. So, yes, he did stay in a building that wasn't up to code, a building that had been condemned. But you wonder how much of that was because he wanted to do the right thing and how much of that was because he was thinking about his political future. And that's where you run into this area of Cory Booker. Is he a fuck nigga or is he not a fuck nigga?
Cory Booker, to me, from what I've read about him, seems like the typical Democrat and says the typical Democratic things and has the typical Democratic issue. Russia, LGBTQ, anti-Trump, anti-racism, Keystone Pipeline, all those things that Hillary would talk about or Bernie Sanders would talk about. So, I would say from what I've read, I don't see a quote-unquote stain on his record. But I do look at a lot of things and I listen to what people say. And so, because one of the reasons why I want to talk about this is from the interview on the Breakfast Club, you know, when they asked him about his specific agenda for black people and he didn't have one. So I'm like, come on, B.
Well, Cory Booker is a politician through and through. He blows with the wind. And one of the reasons why, even despite all my misgivings about Hillary Clinton, one of the reasons why I don't hate Hillary Clinton as much as other people seem to, I don't hate Hillary Clinton at all, mind you, is that at least when you talk about and when you look at Hillary Clinton, you know where she stands. With a lot of these other politicians, they blow with the wind. Take for instance, Cory Booker, going back to him, he recently announced that he won't take money from corporate PACs or federal lobbyists.
Right.
But during the past election, during his election period, during the past election cycle, he brought in more money from corporate America and PACs.
Yeah.
Than almost anybody else.
Yeah, I know. I read that. Like, now all of a sudden, now he don't take that money now that he run for president.
Right. So he doesn't have a plan for black people. But now all of a sudden he wants to support baby bonds, which is supposed to be savings accounts given to
I saw babies that. $1,000 stipends and stuff. Yeah, up to like $1,000 or something.
Right, up to $1,000 is supposed to help close the racial wealth gap. So with him, again, it's not that you have, there's not anything glaring on his record like you have with a Kamala Harris. But what you have is somebody that kind of is like wishy-washy, just blows in the wind. Whichever way that people are moving, he's moving in that direction, trying to capitalize off it. So for me, you can't really pin down what Cory Booker stands for.
He's trying to follow that Obama model.
Makes him a fuck nigga.
He's trying to follow that Obama model to be neutral on a lot of stuff, but not really neutral. But you seem neutral, but you're not really neutral because we know what you're going to do, but you're not neutral. But you come up.
But even to Obama, like, there were at least a few issues you could nail Obama down on. Like, you knew this is what he believed. When it comes to Cory Booker, I literally can't nail him down on anything outside of being a Democrat. He's going to agree with the Democratic majority.
Yeah.
He's down for this Medicare for all. signed on as a co-sponsor. He's down for the Green New Deal. He supported the sentencing reform bill. He's also sponsored a few other bills that were very similar to the quote-unquote criminal justice reform that passed over his tenure. He's definitely worked on those bills often. And so it doesn't, I'm not saying, it doesn't look like he's a bad guy.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily look like he's a guy that's going to move for us as a community either.
But that's how I feel. As I read about him, I was, that's why I said earlier, there are no blemishes on his record. There isn't anything that you could point to be like, see, this is why we can't fuck with Cory Booker.
Right.
But I would say this for people. Take your time in digesting him and what he's saying and really listen to what he's saying, but also still look at things and don't just vote for him because it sounds good, but does it make sense? And is it something that you truly believe will help our community get better?
Yeah, because that's good advice. If I had to choose between him and Kamala Harris, I'm voting Cory Booker. But do I think that Cory Booker is thinking about the black community right now? No, I don't. I don't. And I do think he's a grandstander. And I think one of the reasons, because here's my thing with politicians. Any politician that has core values and a solid set of beliefs, at some point during their political career, they're going to encounter problems because of it. When I run into spotless politicians, I begin to get nervous because that means that you haven't displayed who you really are. There is no way in the world that you can be a politician in America and not upset anybody any of the time.
Right, right. But see, that be my issue with a lot of black politicians. It's like, we know somebody gonna get mad at something you say, so why not just make it black people then, huh? Because you know, I'm always asking the question, why are black politicians afraid to be like, all right, I'm standing on this issue for black people, I'm standing on that issue for black people, I'm standing on that issue, because it's like, well, we don't want to make white people mad, but why black people got to be the ones that's always getting mad? Well, y'all, I mean, as a black person, come on now.
It makes sense to me. I mean, I don't understand. They're okay with people being pissed off about their stances towards other issues that aren't directly
right.
connected to them. I don't
right.
understand why, like, if I was to seriously consider being a politician, that'd be the one thing that I would stand on. Like, you can love me or hate me, but you will at least know that whenever I cast a vote or make a speech or make a statement or anything like that, it's with black people in mind first and foremost.
Right.
Everybody else can get mad. Now, if my views line up with yours at that moment, then I work with you in that moment. So if I'm in a room full of Republicans and everybody's like, why is he there with a room full of Republicans? They would at least be able to say, well, he must honestly think that this is beneficial for black people. That's exactly why I'm in that damn room.
Right.
Get mad all you want, but at least you'll be able to pin down exactly why I'm moving the way I'm moving. With Cory Booker, you can't pin down why he's moving the way he's moving, and he doesn't do anything without telling you about it, which makes you really wonder, is he doing it because it's the right thing to do, or is he doing it so that he can tell you about it?
Cory seemed like that dude that you went to school with who... Like, he ain't never messed with nobody, but he'll tell on you. Like, if the teacher were gone, you had a substitute, and you was in the room in class clowning, he'd be one of them cats with tail. And it's like you can't, like you say, you can't really trust him. He ain't fully fuck nigga, but you, like, he done some fuck nigga shit. But it's just like, he'll show up around, hey guys, what you guys doing? And like, he want to hang out with the crew and everything, but you remember that him snitching on you, so we looking at him like, nah, bro, you can't hang with us. Then be getting mad. Like, you guys never want to hang with me. You got to remind him, bro, you be telling on that stuff. That's what he reminded me of, that dude. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm actually, anybody that, I'm questioning all of the black people that are supporting the Green New Deal, and I'm going to just be honest with you. So, that was kind of one of the things that really made me be like, huh? But again, like you said, Cory Booker when I said he was a fuck nigga, I'm joking. I do think he has tendencies. But some about him just don't sit right. And the fact that you can't nail down any particular issues, this is how he feels, this is how he stands. He's a politician through and through. And if anybody says they don't trust politicians, Cory Booker is a perfect example of a politician, and I don't trust politicians.
So, what you said, the Green New Deal?
Green New Deal.
So, what's your reservations with that?
My reservations with the Green New Deal is right now it doesn't mean anything. It's just a collection of statements that everybody's getting behind with no political framework, no policy initiatives, no nothing. It's just a bunch of statements being made to no end. And you have all of these people, all of these senators, they're even talking about pushing it on the floor for a vote. And it's like, but what is there to vote on? There's literally nothing there. And in there being nothing there, when you just have all these statements, but there's no structure to it, there's no real understanding of how any of this stuff can pan out in terms of paying for it. So one of the statements is we're going to completely switch the power grid over to renewable energy. How? Who's going to pay for that? Who's going to get those jobs? How does that work out? Another one is we're going to create a public sector funded by the government that will ensure 100% employment for all people in America. How? How are you going to do this? And even more important, how are you going to pay for that and pay for a complete power grid restructuring? Go ahead.
No, finish what you're saying.
I was just going to say, and so it's filled with a bunch of stuff like that. You know, we're going to restructure the economy so that it's more equal and more justice involved in the economic models. And people that have been oppressed by the system can now get a leg up. How are you going to do that? Describe how that works, because that's been tried. People have used that description for various other programs, and they never work out well for black people. So how do you do this? We tried that at the end of the Civil War.
All right. So with that being said about creating or putting something in place where that will ensure 100% employment. So. Did you see the clip about the Yang dude? What's the dude, Yang or something, that's running for president, the Asian guy?
I saw a clip about the Asian guy, but I'm not sure if it's the same clip you're talking about.
And he was talking about the wealth in black America in like 30 years or 50 years, whatever, be zero or something like that.
Yeah, I did a show on that, unless it's from the screen.
Right, all right. So
on the report. There was a report.
Right. And then also... Dr. Anderson has been talking about it for the longest.
He has.
And he has also mentioned the book, The End of Work. I have the book. I haven't read it yet. But once again, Dr. Anderson, being ahead of the curve, doing his homework like he's supposed to, has been telling us that we need to find different ways of making money rather than just being the labor force. You have to create industries. You have to be a part of industries that are booming and thriving and all these things here. Otherwise, if you only know how to work with your hands, then you ain't going to have no jobs in the future, because a lot of things are becoming automated, becoming using robots and all these different things here. So how can, on one end, you say these things as like Cory Booker and them saying, all right, well, this thing is going to ensure jobs for Americans. That's on one end, but we got all these economic experts on the other end telling us a different story. So that would be, that's something I want to hear them explain and break down.
But they're not going to, because right now they're being led by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is a who is or was a climate change activist before she was voted in. She has no real understanding about how policy works. It doesn't seem like she has an understanding about how government works. It doesn't seem like everybody's just caught up in the fanfare surrounding her and trying to capitalize on her movement. And that's not a slight against her, because I think she honestly believes that what she's doing is the right thing. I think she honestly thinks she's making a difference. And I do think she's ignorant to history. And I don't just say that based on her endorsing the Green New Deal, which is not a new concept. I say that based on the things she's done and said.
She has
a firm grasp of history.
What position is she holding right now again?
She's a congresswoman. She's in the House of Representatives.
Okay. Yeah, hey, that's right. That's right. She one of the new blue people.
Right, she's one of the new people who hasn't realized that in 2 years you get voted in, you got to run again.
Yeah, she become a star, huh?
And that's the other thing. Like rock star politicians, name me one rock star politician that did anything worth a damn. They usually don't.
I say this. I guess by the time Maxine Waters became a rock star politician, what she had already...
She had already been a politician for like 20 years.
Right, she had already been there, but that's the closest one I could think of who actually, to answer your question, who actually done something for her position.
Maxine Waters is a rock star in the black community.
Right.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a rock star, period. In America, in terms of the entire American political establishment, people of all walks of life know who she is. You can bump into a lot of people that aren't black that don't know who Maxine Waters is, despite her at this point being one of the most powerful people in Congress. So, but they can't explain how they're going to pay for all of this stuff because they haven't thought about it. Because they're caught up in the movement of just, and the Democrats are largely turning into this party, we just want to win. Trump won by making big promises and fulfilling none of them. And now it looks like the Democratic Party is following that premise. Let's just make these big, elaborate promises. Not say Trump didn't fulfill none of them, because he promised to ban Muslims, and he did that. And he promised to restructure several American institutions, and he has done that. But that model of let's make these big, elaborate promises and get people worked up so that they show up and vote, that's taking root in the Democratic Party. We saw it work with the Tea Party and then Trump. Now we're seeing the Democratic Tea Party led by AOC, and we're going to see which president comes out of that or Trump gets reelected. But when they're pushed on the issue, and people are saying these programs are going to cost trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, where's this money going to come from? They're usually like, well, let's not think about that, or let's shift gears. Let's focus on all the good that's going to happen. We need to know where this money's going to come from. Because if you're going to pull it out of the American taxpayers, if you're going to pull it out of impoverished communities, if you're going to raise sales taxes or things of that nature, which, you know, people love to pay for their policies by issuing a half cent or a full cent or a 2 cent increase to sales tax, that's a direct attack on low-income black people. Low-income people, period. If I only make $40,000, if I only make $20,000 a year, and my gas just went from $1 a gallon to $1.02 a gallon, that's a larger percentage of my income that has to go into putting gas in my car additionally than if I make $40,000 a year, $60,000 a year, or $1 million a year. It's a larger percentage of my income. So those little taxes that they apply to everybody, supposedly equal across the board, that's really fucking the little guy. That's really putting the un, an undue amount of burden on lower income people. So are you going to pay for these programs with a flat tax that's really going to beat up on poor people? Or are you going to have some sort of progressive income tax? But then if you do that, it's probably not going to pass because the rich people have the power to fight back. So how are you going to pay for this? How are you going to say every American can go to college for free? How are you going to do that? It sounds great, but how are you going to do it?
Well,
how are you going to say, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Let's just go back to them making promises and people are liking what they're saying, but not really, you know, putting real critical thought into it and kind of breaking it down and kind of looking at it from all sides. Can this actually happen?
Right. And that's the big beef with the Green New Deal. It's a bunch of big promises, half of which have almost zero chance of happening. And that's why I think a lot of the more established Democrats are pushing back on it. A lot of people think there's a power struggle because they want to maintain power. That might be true. But the other component is they understand how this works. This isn't the first time a dream package has been pushed. The last time the Democrats tried to do something like this, the Republicans beat them up on it, just like the Republicans now are beating them up on this Green New Deal. How are you going to pay for everybody go to college for free? How are you going to pay for everybody have a government job? How are you going to pay for, you know, the entire power grid being switched over to renewable energy? How are you going to pay for that? How are you going to pay for the restructuring of the labor market to accomplish such
those are long term goals.
How are you going to pay for the maintenance? How are you going to pay for the, is that model even sustainable? How are you going to do all of these things? Damn saying it. It sounds good. Everybody would love it. But tell me how we going to do it. And don't just present the idea to me and then shut me down when I ask you, how do we do it? You presented the idea, but you haven't thought about how to do it? Then why are you presenting the idea?
Because it sounds good, and you know, that's what people want to hear. That people just want to hear some good stuff like that. So they ain't going to really look into it. So.
I was thinking about doing a show on the Green New Deal, but I don't know.
The Green New Deal. Patrick don't like the color green. You don't like the color green.
I like the color green in my pocket.
Nah, dog. You born on St. Patrick Day and you don't like the color green, dog. You a hypocrite, dog.
I tell you what, any politician supporting the Green New Deal, and it's supposed to be centered on climate change, but they threw in a bunch of stuff. I think they threw in a bunch of stuff on justice and equality just to make it more appealing to minority groups. But the concept of a Green New Deal is one that goes back to the 90s, maybe even a little bit further back than that, with the initiation of the popularization of climate change science and the idea that we could pass a policy that would restructure the American government in such a way that it would be less harmful on the environment. So it's not even like it's her idea, but everybody signed on to it. And for them to all be as smart as they are, I don't understand why they're making what seems to be such a dumb move.
Well, we know when Democrats, when their back's against the wall, they get real Republican. So look out for that, black folks. Look out for a real Republican move to be made when Democrats want to make a splash.
Oh, they doing it right now. Because they're running, a lot of these campaigns are being run very, very similar to the Republican campaigns of the last few election cycles. So you're 100% right with that statement.
So let's transition. Let's go to the continent of Africa, Ethiopia, specifically, like the country said, specifically. And Ethiopia is taking land back. This happened in October, but it started happening in October. But Ethiopia is taking land back from investors who promised jobs and other things to be created and economic injection that was good, and motherfuckers lied, so they taking their damn land back. You heard about this before?
Yeah, I've heard about it. Now, are they doing it again? Because I read about it a couple years back.
A couple years back?
No. I'm thinking about South Africa. Never mind.
Yeah, because remember we talked about South Africa, and I think we also talked about Zimbabwe.
Yeah, it was Zimbabwe.
Because
there'd be a couple countries to do it. Yeah.
So Ethiopia is one of the latest. So now, what's interesting about this is one of the billionaires who they actually took some land back. They took like 55 acres back from him. But this investor is Ethiopian born. But in total, they say Ethiopia has revoked a total of 412.6 hectares of land held by investors. So basically, I think they said in 2003 or 2000, something like early 2000s or mid 2000s, 2005, they gave out this land around 2005. They started giving out this land to investors, and the investors were supposed to stimulate the economy, help build up Ethiopia, help create jobs and all these things here. But that was like basically what happened was they said all they did, and I'm reading a quote, they said all they did was make a fence around 1,000 square feet of land and left it for years. That's all they did. Instead of building the city, they gave the city a bad image, making the place of waste collection. So they was given all of this money or all of this land an opportunity to create something for the people of Ethiopia, and they ain't do shit but just sit on the land. And now one of the biggest investors is the Midrock company that was run by Mohammed Hussein Al-Moody. And, yeah, they're taking their land back from him. Like, what you think about all this, man?
I mean, you know, I think that the countries in Africa need to reclaim more of the land and redistribute it to more of their people. Now, at the same time, if you're not doing nothing with the land, especially if you've made promises to develop the land, you should have the land taken from you. I'm not against that whatsoever, especially not if the country gives it to you for the sole purpose of you developing it. You know, you made a promise or whatever to develop it, you should. And that's a lot of land. You know, 1 hectare is 2.5 acres.
Okay.
So, you know,
how you say that word? Say that word again.
Hectare?
Hectare. Okay. I said it wrong, but there you go.
Yeah, I didn't notice nothing wrong with how you said it, but whatever. But that's a lot of land. That is a lot of land. You said 2,000 of them?
No, it was 412. That's how much was given out. 55 was given out to Muhammad. And so like 33,000 of the land was leased in the middle of the city.
So they gave him 55 hectares.
Yeah.
So, you know, that again, though, that's 2.5 acres per hectare. That's over 100 acres of land. That ain't nothing to sneeze at.
Right, and it was just like, they ain't do nothing with the land. They just, the land was just there. It was sitting on it. It was just using the land, just holding on the land. And it's supposed to be building shit for the people. And it's like, well, one of the dudes, like Mohammed Hussein, he a fuck boy and a sellout, because, you know, he's all about that money grab and stuff like that, because you're just sitting on the damn land. And it's like, damn, but I'm glad that they got their money, that they're getting their land back, and they need to kick a lot of these people out, and they need to kick a lot of these other foreign interest groups out of Africa right now, because Africa needs to build itself up from within. And yeah, it might take a little longer, but they need to get rid of the sellout rulers and all these different things, because Africa ain't, there's parts of Africa that's in bad shape.
There are. And you can't be in such a rush to develop that you compromise your country's integrity and your country's culture.
Well, that's one thing that happened with the Chinese being in there now.
Yeah. And they're learning that lesson with a lot of the debts and the loans, a lot of the debts that, because these people, a lot of African nations took out Chinese loans thinking that the conditions would be better for them than the loans that they were getting from the International Monetary Fund, the international monetary bodies and things of that nature, European forces, Western forces. And now they're in such dire straits because of those loans that they're going back to the international body seeking relief from the Chinese loans. One of the reasons why,
right.
One of the reasons why the Chinese have been forgiving so many of those debts is to maintain their image in Africa and their credibility in terms of their image around the rest of the world. But these Africans, who am I? I don't know that they'll listen, but if I could get them in a room, I would definitely tell them, develop your infrastructure on your own. Develop these skills and this labor and all of these land. Develop all that shit on your own.
Well, I know they have been told that. I know people have said that. But like you say, it's a lot of greedy rulers in Africa and a lot of sellout rulers in Africa. So that's why you see a lot of the so-called foreign aid that's been coming in. But it's just both ways. Like Africa is in bad shape, and Africa's still being picked on and bullied and still being taken away. It's like everybody's hooking their holes up to Africa and sucking it dry.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's people who are directly from the continent or people who are not African. But Africa is very, very, very vulnerable, and it's been vulnerable. And the vulnerability won't stop until the structures get in place to where Africa starts saying no, and also make some kind of aid, not necessarily from these countries that's going to suck them dry. I guess that's where a great relationship with African Americans who had structure, African people around the other places in the world who have structure. So really, as I'm talking, I'm thinking about it's a bigger issue than just Africa, because Africa has really nowhere to turn to unless it goes to other Africa. Well, let me stop saying Africa like it's a country. Specific countries in Africa have no other place to turn to unless other countries in Africa are going to give them aid, you know?
Well, here's the deal, though. And you're right. Africa is a collection of 57 countries. So we do need to definitely, for the sake of clarity, because I know what you mean, but you know people will be difficult. So for the sake of clarity and precision of language, yes, we understand that Africa is a continent and not a country. And we understand that there are 54 or 57, I forget which one, countries in Africa. But black people in America would be in an amazing position to help the continent if we got our shit straight. Like, the GDP of the entire continent of Africa is only about $2.2 trillion. Black people in America, if we aggregated our wealth and did what we were supposed to do in terms of supporting ourselves, we could provide at least a quarter of their economy in pure assistance. And the same as the aid that international bodies are going in there with, you know, hey, you let us set this up and we'll set this up for you. Meanwhile, on the back end, they're taking resources at below market rates, basically robbing the continent under the guise of helping them. We could set up real deals where we actually paid them market prices for their resources, because they don't need aid. They need markets. And there was an African leader that was the first person I heard say that, which speaks to your point about the fact that we know that there are some African leaders and African people that really are trying to do what's best for Africa.
Right.
But they don't need aid. They don't need NATO and all of these other intergovernmental bodies going in trying to aid them into developed countries. They need people going in paying market prices for their resources so that they have the money to develop on their own, because they do need money. And we could provide that money if we got our shit together. But
right.
on both sides, man, it's jacked up because we ain't ready to help nobody. We can't even help ourselves.
Nah. And even like black people in the UK don't have their stuff together because they should be right behind us. But.
Most definitely. Everybody wants to talk. And that's where I get frustrated. Ran a little bit, but everybody wants to talk all that pro-Africa bullshit and this, that, and the third. When it comes down to it, the best way to help Africa is to get your own national community together. Then you as a national community can form deals with African nations that can provide them real money, market prices for the resources that they have. They can then take that money, develop their own infrastructure, develop their own labor, develop their own intellectual bodies, their own energy grids and all this other stuff. You know,
yeah.
Even the money that Akon used, we celebrated him as right we should.
He can't do it by himself, though.
Delivering all that power to all of those people. But he took a loan from a Chinese bank, from the Chinese government to do it.
Oh, shit.
So,
but,
you know,
yeah.
I mean,
you know, once again, though, there are no structures in place for any other African diasporic whatever aid to even come. So, I mean, you can be like, I know somebody probably here and be mad at Akon for taking aid from the Chinese, and of course, we've seen the fallout from the aid from the Chinese. But at the same time, what we got to listen to what we're saying, though. If there are no African alternatives, people are going to go with what they know.
Right. I'm not mad at
Akon
for it at all.
Right. And then, but I'm just saying for not necessarily for you, but somebody here that's
saying. I get what you're saying.
Akon tripping. Yeah. Man, Akon might be tripping, but your ass ain't going to help him.
Right. I've known that Akon took the loan from the Chinese for a minute now. I think I found out maybe a few months after I found out that he had done what he had done. And I still celebrate him for doing it because he did what he had to do. Stuff like that makes me frustrated with us because there's no reason why Akon should have had to go to the Chinese government. There's no reason
right.
why that money couldn't have come from the black community and the UK community, where even though we dirt poor, most of us at least still have electricity. You
right.
know, we're not that poor. Most of us still have clean drinking water, and we understand that most Africans have electricity and clean drinking water as well. But we also understand that there are far too many of them that don't. And we can't be talking all of this pro-black this and pro-black that, and we need to do this for Africa. We need to bring this kind of attention to the continent. Yeah, but what kind of resources are you directing to the continent?
Right, yeah, that's what I was just about to say. You can... Like, we're in a day and age where bringing attention to things makes people, you know, somebody. Like, you're somebody, you did something if you bring attention to stuff. Hey, man, you can bring attention to the fact that I got cancer, but if you can't help me get over that shit, you ain't doing but fuck me up.
Right.
Fuck you told me,
folks. Great analogy, by the way. I like that analogy.
I mean, for what you told me, folks, you can't help me.
Yeah, I like that
so,
analogy.
So, I mean, that's where we are. We need to get past just, hey, bringing attention to things and really start to think about how can we help make real change. Because if we don't help make real change, hey, man, guess what? We just told y'all in the last segment, hey, these jobs coming to an end in America soon for the poor. And we know that's cold for black people. Not all black people are poor, but it's a whole lot of black people that's poor. So, got to get our stuff together. Got to get it together real soon. Got to start building and creating. If we don't, you see what's going on around the world. Poverty levels will rise. If people think they're poor now, wait 30 years and you don't get your stuff together.
Yeah, I mean, this,
better pay attention to these trends.
This shit is so real, man. It really is. Like, that report saying that the black community will have zero. A net wealth of zero in less than 50 years? Man, go listen to that show on Lessons from the Screen. That's some scary stuff, man.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so let's transition. Some crazy shit, man. So in Atlanta, there was a football thing, child sex thing, during Super Bowl weekend. Yeah. Some sick bitches in their ass whooped, right? So said 21 men were arrested for allegedly arranging to have sex with a child. The GBI task force announced the arrest that followed an undercover sting that lasted 5 days, ended on Super Bowl Sunday. The men ranged in age from 20 to 55 and worked in a variety of fields, from rideshare drivers to construction and grocery store clerks. One of the men arrested was a behavioral health case manager. Some also were arrested for having illegal drugs on them, according to authorities. The sting was centered in Brookhaven, Georgia, but included agencies across Georgia who are members of the Georgia Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. The goal of the months-long investigation called Operation Interception was to arrest persons who communicate with children online, have sexually explicit conversations, and then travel to meet them for the purpose of having sex. Only one person arrested was charged with human trafficking violations because they allegedly arranged to pay money for sex with the child through a website known for sex solicitation. They probably used this card, dumbass. This was described as a decrease in solicitation in relation to similar operations to task force. They put one dude named Thomas Chuing. He's 32 years old. Said one of the men arrested, 32-year-old Thomas Chuing, however you want to say it, a gaming employee from Metro Atlanta and a Twitch partner. According to the DeKalb County police arrest warrant, Twain thought he was talking to a 14-year-old girl. So, ain't it? Twain and these other 20 motherfuckers, they are sick. Hey, man. Why? Well, we know why. I was going to ask why is this stuff here still happening. We know why, but I still want to ask why the fuck this stuff still happening? Just for effects. Why is this still happening? Like, this, what? I shouldn't have to read that, though.
No, not in what's supposed to be this modern day and age.
I thought we were civilized, though. Ain't that what they told us?
Means something different for different people, I guess.
But I mean, all right, so I guess my question for this is, how do we as, especially me and you, we men, how do we, for the future generations, help do things so stuff like this don't happen?
I mean, that's a community effort that the community don't want to be involved in.
Turn yourself up a bit.
I said that's a community effort that the community don't want to be involved in.
I do agree.
Because the very first step in all of that is taking ownership. There is a problem. We got issues with step one.
Yeah.
You know, you have people out there who legit don't want to acknowledge the fact that there's a problem. So, you know, these motherfuckers are not, they're not offshoots of something else. You know, these people aren't one-offs. They aren't like random occurrences. Like, oh my God, that dude is
sick.
Yeah,
this happened all the time.
Yeah, like this.
But you got to do things.
So that's issue number one right there. Issue number two is holding these people accountable. People don't want to hold everybody accountable, though. They only want to hold certain people accountable. Other people, they won't give a pass to. So
yeah,
the next step is actually having these conversations with our children. Nobody wants to do that neither. Nobody, you know, but the biggest problem, I think, is just holding people accountable. Don't nobody want to hold Uncle Bobo from down the street accountable for being a pedophile. Don't nobody want to hold, you know, the powerful executives accountable until after the fact. While they doing the shit, you know, everybody's cool with it because that's just the price of doing business. Once they all old and wrinkly, halfway finna die, now everybody want to bring attention to it, want to talk about it. And even then, they only want to talk about it from the standpoint of that one individual. They don't want to talk about it from the standpoint of an entire culture of which both men and women are responsible for propagating, as you said, on numerous occasions.
But it's I think, a sick twist to that, what we're talking about, especially if we're talking culture change and doing real things, is a sick twist is you have a whole movement to legalize pedophilia. And some black people are part of that. Like a whole movement to legalize, like, pedophilia, like grown men mess with kids. Because we already, of course, R. Kelly and all these other things come out. We already know grown men mess with kids. We know Harvey Weinstein, all these other people, sexual predators and all these things. But then when you have a whole movement to make it okay for people to be having sex with kids, man, like, that's this shit's sick, man. But it's just like these dudes and a whole other people, man, we just need to ride around with samurai swords cutting people's dicks off or something. I don't know, man.
Samurai swords.
Something, man. Give us the best sword from history. Let's ride around and just cut.
I mean, but man, we can't do that because then, you know, we would be attacked. You know, who are you to make that decision?
Man, but shit, come on, look here. You can tap me on you. Who are you to be like, I want to have sex with you? You 14, so you should have sex with me, but let me convince you to have sex with me. And I get where you're coming from. People will be, well, you can't judge. We already got on top of that judge and stuff, but it's like, when you got these, but think about what we're saying, even the counter to that, and you playing devil's advocate, but that's where we are in this society today. People don't see something wrong with taking advantage of people who shouldn't be taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we don't even have to just leave that to the realm of sexual violence and sexual harassment, just like across the board. When people get the opportunity to take advantage of something or to overpower, to dominate, they do it.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
And that's a real issue in our problem. Like, we shouldn't be having these reports. Us men and women in this society need to get together and do something different about this shit. We tired of talking about this stuff. So, hey. We ain't gonna beat that dead horse down. We just, them bitches, them men crazy as fuck, and they need their ass whooped. All right, so this last story, man, this last thing, kind of, man, it's out there now, man. Amanda Seals versus Myron Rowe. I know you've been up on it, man.
Nah, not that much, actually. What happened?
All right, so Amanda Seals was on her podcast, I believe, and the Breakfast Club, and she was on her own podcast called Small Doses on the Breakfast Club. She said she spoke out about being sexually harassed but didn't name any name, and she said from that she got 8 calls from women who just automatically knew who she was talking about and said that, hey, Myron Rowe sexually harassed me too. And then later on, she came out in other interviews, in an Instagram video or something like that, saying that Myron Rowe has been constant. Well, Myron Rowe harassed her, sexually harassed her and some other women, saying that he came to the door butt naked and harassing them and things. But she went public with this without any concrete evidence or proof. And I think that's one of the dangerous things about what's going on in this situation particularly is we have no way to substantiate what she's saying, and she has no way to substantiate what was told to her if that was really told to her. And so to go public, because, you know, us, we the first ones to go and jump down somebody's throat for sexual harassment. But
right.
You got to be careful about putting stories like this out if you have no concrete evidence, because you could be derailing this man's whole future. So I don't think that I haven't read anywhere where there have been any fallout from it on his end, but it's just kind of like, this is kind of one of the opposite things. And we don't know all the information yet, but for right now, there's nothing to prove. And she's even said, like, there's no concrete evidence. There's nothing to be able to prove that Myron Rowe did these things. So, but she was like, I'm a truth teller, and it's my job to put the truth out and all these things here. And it's like, you got to be careful with this, baby. Like, you got to be real careful with this, because if you're wrong, man, look at him, man. And you mess this man's career up, we got to talk bad about you. Like, we got to start supporting her. If she's wrong, if she out here lying, if she out here just putting information out there like that.
No, I think reporters, because she's a reporter, right?
No, she's not a reporter. She's like a... remember she used to be a VJ for MTV's? I guess.
Yeah, I remember that. But you know, I kind of
she's like a comedian and an actress now.
People with platforms, period. And I guess the reporter, because I knew she was a VJ, but I thought she was kind of on kind of the newsy side of entertainment. So I always assumed she was a reporter. But people that, well, in addition to not knowing that much about her, period. But anyway. I agree with you. I think people that have a platform, they have a responsibility that a lot of them have started taking lightly for fear of being on the wrong side of something. And I think in the era of Me Too, they'd rather be on the wrong side of ruining somebody's life in terms of that somebody being a male than being on the wrong side of not standing up for a woman who's been violated. And I think the concept of a happy medium, a middle ground, has been lost in that. There are two sides to the story, and there are two lives that could potentially be ruined by a story.
Yeah.
And you have to consider both of them. However unfair that might seem to a potential victim, they have to understand that.
If I go live with something, I better not cut you up. But if I go public with some information and I don't have any proof and I turn out to be wrong, that's bad for me.
Not only is it bad for you, but it's bad for every other story that sounds like it in the future. It's not a win in any sense of the word. And not only that, but there's still fallout from even the accusation. Like, men still have to deal with the fallout just from being accused. So,
yeah,
you have to understand, and it's not even like we haven't seen false accusations before. Like, the more and more these stories happen, the more and more we're seeing false accusations happen as well. Now, granted, the lion's share of the cases still seem to be true. But a ruined life is still a ruined life.
Right.
So
right.
They have a responsibility to say, look, I understand your story. I hear your pain. I feel your pain to the best that I can from whatever position I'm in. But I can't just run with it just because you say so with no corroborating evidence.
Well, especially when we're in a time where when most likely if a black man is accused of sexual assault, there are some drastic repercussions, and as opposed to when a white man is accused of that or even convicted, he's given the lightest sentence ever. And it's like black men are, when it comes to sexual assault, we're bearing the brunt of all men when it comes to sexual violence in America. That's how I feel. I feel there are other men who can get away with it, but somebody has to pay for it, and the black men are the ones who pay for it. And that's not excusing the actions of that the black man had, but he's still paying more because, hell, a white boy who's supposed to get 40 years getting 3 months of probation and $4,000 payoffs.
Well, we know that so, there's a power dynamic at play as well, and who can get away with something and who can't. And black men largely don't have that type of power, the same way that black women don't have that type of power when they have to stand up against white women or against any other system for that matter.
Right.
So,
but that's why Amanda can't just be coming out with stories like this without doing hard research and getting full evidence.
But the concept of getting full evidence nowadays, you know, when you say that to people regarding sexual assault or domestic violence or anything like that, people nowadays believe that it's irresponsible not to come out with a story like that just because you don't have something as trivial as proof. And that's, you know, like, I feel like that's a big part of the problem we're dealing with nowadays is that it's not on anybody to prove one way or another what happened. It's kind of on the media to decide which version of the story they believe. And that's the story they present. That's the story that the people hear. And, you know, it just goes from there. It's a real sad place to be in. And I only say that because even listening to your show, you had three or four shows where an athlete on the fix, where an athlete was falsely accused of something.
Yeah.
So we know that there are people out there willing to do that.
Yeah, false report. False reporting happens. But I think the problem with men who try to articulate their point about the frequency of false reporting is statistically recorded, it's like 3 to 5%. But once again, we've talked about this before, it seems higher from our perspective, especially from black men from the hood who are athletes. And because it seems like we hear a story every year of some black athlete being accused of sexual assault.
Well, the other side to that, too, is that most black men I know have been falsely accused at one point or another, but it never went to the police level. It never went to the level of where it would actually be recorded in statistics. And I think that's something that a lot of women have to understand as well, is that a lot of men have this perception that women are lying, not because we don't want to believe the women, but because most of the men I know have been falsely accused at some point in their lives. And so personal experience is a motherfucker. It take a bitch to get over personal experience. If a dude has been falsely accused of sexual assault, every incident afterwards that he comes across, he's going to assume that dude is being falsely accused as well. Numbers run into that interesting place where, like, I've been falsely accused of sexual assault, but when it was brought up to HR, she backed down. So it never went to the form of a police report or anything that could be tracked. It's just me and her and the HR person that knew about it. Now, on the other end, I also have sisters who have been sexually assaulted, and I'm married to a woman that's been sexually assaulted. So from that, I know that it happens as well. But a lot of people don't have that dynamic. You know what I'm saying?
Well, also in support of what you were saying about a lot of men who have been falsely accused, and it's not all men, but it's a number of men who've been falsely accused. When they hear the stories, they automatically say, well, they lying. The girls are lying. On the other hand, you have women who have been sexually assaulted who or have the same ideology or the same thought process of when they hear a story, they automatically believe the victim. So you have that dynamic going both ways with men who've been falsely accused and women who have been assaulted. So those two things are all working against each other. And it takes, I'm not going to tell somebody what it takes to get over that because I don't know, I haven't been in those situations. So they would have to go, you know, get more help and more information on being able to move past that place. But you, what Amanda did was reckless. It was, I want to say it's a, I don't even know what word I want to come up with. It's very reckless, man. It was a very reckless thing to do without concrete evidence. We're not saying that Myron Rowe didn't sexually assault anybody. Well, what we are saying is Amanda Seals didn't have enough information to come public to try to put that man out like that.
Right.
That's what we are saying. We're not saying that you shouldn't come out. You come, if you got evidence and you know somebody out here doing some fuck shit, you put them out. But if you don't know, if you're just going off some he say, she say. And then, but another thing that was kind of interesting about this, about that, with what she said to me is, okay, so there are millions of men in this world. And a lot of people have similar behavior patterns as well. So how did 8 women know who you were talking about specifically and nobody else didn't? What was it about what you said, how you said that those 8 women automatically knew that that was a Myron Rowe that she was describing when she didn't put any name on it? That's one thing that's interesting about that with me.
Yeah, because that means he's either a real, real bad dirtbag or she's lying. You take your pick. But if you tell a story and everybody automatically knows who you're talking about, that means that either that person is, like, that's just what they do and everybody knows it, or y'all was sitting around the campfire one day and just came up with something.
Because, I mean, I don't think Myron Rowe, might got some clout, but I don't think Myron Rowe got that much clout to be able to thwart, say, real sexual assault claims. I just don't. So, not saying that they're lying, but just trying to think about it from all standpoints. If Myron Rowe, because like you said, though, those like his behavior has to be very consistent, drastic, specific, all these different things. If I can just say, hey, well, this person, 5'2", red bone, she smoked Newports, she wear a lace front, and she like to hit people in the eye. Now, you know how many people I just described?
Yeah.
Well, if somebody be like, oh, man, well, you talking about Prontisha. Yeah, that's Prontisha you talking about. Well, how do you know that? So it's kind of, it don't always add up to me. So.
No, not unless, like I said, the only way that works is if we all hang out together and we've made jokes about it, and that's kind of like an integral part of who this person is, and everybody knows it. In which case, yeah, all right, I can pick that person out based on that description, because we've had these conversations before, and we all agree that that's who this person is.
Yeah, but even in this instance, if I'm on a nationally syndicated radio program or a podcast, and I'm talking to the world, and I just say that, because it's one thing, like, oh, man, that reminds me of my homeboy. But it's nothing but not. That is that person. Because, yeah, there are characteristics that can remind you of other people, but if you say, yeah, well, no, that's that person. Like, damn.
But we don't know, you know, we don't know what conversation she's been having behind closed doors. And I know she just said these women reached out to her, but do we really know that these are women that she didn't know? I mean, if they had the capability of reaching out to her, how did they reach out to you? Was it on your public channels, or did they have some sort of back channel way to access you? Are they friends? Are they family? Like, who are these women to you? You know,
no, I mean that. Those are good questions to be asked, but it's still like, but how do you pick one person out of all these men in America who she could possibly been talking about? That's what I'm thinking about. Like,
it's valid. You
know,
and that's why I said it. Before we can even get into that question, we've got to figure out who these women are to her. If they just random ass women, then that, you know, like, that paints a whole different picture of the scenario than if they're all women that she has a prior relationship with.
But even and we have no way to validate, right? We have no way to validate that, or we haven't seen any information to validate that what she's saying is true about being contacted by eight different women. Because for eight different women to just come out the blue, and let's say if she didn't know the women, like, well, damn, like, because if I say, this dude was in the 70s messing with Quaaludes and all these things here, you can't just be like, oh, I know you're talking about Bill Cosby. Quaaludes was a thing back then. And so, you know what I'm saying? So it's kind of things that kind of don't add up. But at the same time, I'm not going to fully say that she's lying. Let me restate that. I'm not going to say that she's lying. I'm trying to go through all the information and things, but things don't add up, I say that.
Yeah, well. So,
just, we have to be careful about information that we're putting out, especially things like this, because we could potentially ruin somebody's life. And if that person is innocent and we ruin those people's lives, then we some scumbags, basically.
Yeah, anything that has the capability of changing somebody's life, the trajectory of their life and everything else, you got to be careful with it.
You got to. Do your due diligence and get all the information before you go public. And if you don't, set your ass up.
Yeah.
Hey, do I want to remind you all before we close the show out, do want to remind you all that I just dropped my third book on the Social Giants, Volume 3, South America, which I'm covering 12 sung and unsung heroes from the African diaspora. Also, a couple, one indigenous figure, Tupac Amaru II, and talking about their lives and their contributions to freedom, their culture, to humanity, to their families, to their communities, and how they help make the whole environment and everything better, not just for their generation, but for future generations. So giving more history on the African diaspora throughout the world is volume 3 in the series. So make sure you go check it out at www.ontheshouldersone.com or go to Amazon and type in On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 3, South America, and my book will come up. We got this PIT web design busting. You need a website design, need a website done. Go to PITwebdesign.com. And our squad, me, Pat, and the rest of the squad will definitely hook you up with a great website. Make sure you check that out. You know, to go to PACTSINC.org, PAXINC.org, to check out everything going on with our sponsors, PAX Inc. Make sure you check out Pat's show, Lessons from the Screen, every Thursday. Make sure every Monday you check out the Fit Sports Podcast. Every Friday, 10:30 p.m., check out the live showing of the Enigma Sept Hour. The Freedom Train app. Make sure you get the Freedom Train app if you don't already have it. Go to the Google Play Store. And it's available in the iTunes Store. Correct, Pat?
With the app?
No, yeah.
The app's not on the iTunes Store.
Oh, well, if you got an iPhone, you need to get your Android so you can get down with the app.
If you got an iPhone, you can still listen to our shows.
Go check us. Yeah. The shows are on iTunes. The shows are on iTunes, but the app is not connected. The app is not available for iPhone.
Yeah,
but be cool and get your Android.
Yeah, you really should anyways for social reasons.
There you go. So you can be somebody in life. Anything else you want to add? Anything else I missed? Any updates? Announcement? Church announcement?
No, my book should be coming out soon. The editing is coming along. I know I said it would be out around the same time Joe's book would, but we went back through it and we found some pretty substantial changes. So it's but it's still coming along. We're still working towards the goal. So,
hey, man, y'all make sure y'all go to our social media. Go to Freedom Train Network on Facebook, Freedom Train Network on Instagram, and Freedom Train Net on Twitter. And go to our website, freedomtrainradio.com. And y'all wish Pat a happy birthday. It's my dog's birthday just passed. Y'all going to show my dog some love, goddammit. What's your part of the shot?
Power to the paper.
Hey, man, y'all stay black. Y'all stay powerful. And make sure y'all wash y'all hands before, while you're in the bathroom, after the bathroom, during the bathroom, wash y'all hands, because a lot of people don't like to wash their hands, and I don't like people who don't like to wash their hands. So make sure y'all do that. And, yeah, might go down.
Already?
As soon as this thing want to run slow. I'm trying to close out the show, and this thing don't want to act right. So, hey, man, two fingers in the air, like we just don't care. We out of here.
Thank you.